Welcome to the Think Christian podcast, where we talk about faith and pop culture, because there's no such thing as secular. I'm Josh Larson, your host and senior producer over at thinkchristian.net. It's been 5 years since Vampire Weekend's last album, Father of the Bride, and given how much attention we paid to that release here at TC, we had a podcast conversation about it, and Joel Mayward wrote a great post about it. We were, of course, greatly anticipating the band's latest, Only God Was Above Us. Now, religious allusions like that one in the title, that's just one reason this has been such a fascinating band for us, in addition to their world music-inflected rock sensibility. In the Mockingbird newsletter, Megan Ritchie described the new album as having, quote, a vague religiosity, a deep and persistent curiosity about faith and the divine, end quote. To help me investigate that further, let's bring on my previous partners in Vampire Weekend conversation, Eric Danielson and Abby Olchesi. Welcome, Eric. Welcome, Abby. A new Vampire Weekend album brings us together again. But before we dive into that, I thought it might be fun to do something of a first quarter of 2024 music check-in. We are recording this in April, so a few months have gone by. And I'm just wondering if there's been anything particularly exciting for you at this stage in the game, music-wise, a whole album, maybe just a song. What have you found yourself returning to in these first couple of months? Abby, maybe we'll start with you.
I think my favorite album of the year so far has been the band Idols, their latest album, Tank. I've been a huge fan of Idols since their first album. They're like this hardcore punk outfit who are... just, while their songs are really hard, their attitude is about as sweet and radically accepting as it gets. And so I follow these guys like they're my own friends, because they remind me so much of people that are in my life. And their latest album, I think, is just, I think it's their most emotionally mature album. And I think it's the one that comes closest to spiritual enlightenment. There are some tracks on there that talk about radical love and radical acceptance. One track in particular called Grace, while the lead singer is actively saying, you know, no God, no King, I say love is the thing. Like, all of the other parts of the song are just like, you are so close. You are so close to getting it. And I think that one day they might. But it's such an interesting step forward for the band, and I think a lovely album.
All right. Great recommendation. Thank you. Now, Eric, I've seen lots of suggestions roll by on your Friday Five posts on Instagram. Thank you for those, by the way. I frequently find something to spend some time with over the weekend. Do you have a clear favorite among some of those that you've been listing there?
I'm still a little bit reticent to say favorite album so far, but I will give you a favorite song, which I think it's a little bit of a cheat, but I think it counts. It was released as a single last year, but then is on an EP that just came out this year. So I think it counts as a 2024 song.
We'll allow it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. We'll check with the judges. The song is called Belly of the Beast by the songwriter Rustin Kelly. I think Rustin Kelly has kind of made a name for himself, but maybe folks that aren't super familiar with his work will know that he was married for a time to Kacey Musgraves, who also has a very nice new record out this year. But he released a record last year called The Weakness, and then followed that up this year with an EP called Weakness, etc. I just really appreciate kind of that language, frankly. Like, I think songwriters, there are a lot of songwriters we all probably love, artists we love that are very emotionally vulnerable, but Rustin Kelly really handles that language of actual weakness really well, in a way that I feel like a lot of people don't do. And Belly of the Beast is this, I mean, it's a pretty stripped down song, as is the whole EP. It's him at a piano. And then just really the only other instrument I think is this kind of like almost like Nebraska-esque Springsteen harmonica that he plays throughout. But the whole song, I one of the first times I was listening to it, kind of through a lot of emotion, texted a video of it to my wife and just said, I think this might be the most Christian song I've heard in a long time, because he is just talking through his own experiences of like recovery and heartbreak and all of these things, and kind of talking about the things that we go to try to self-medicate, to heal, those sorts of things. And he actively talks about, references angels in the song, and talks about calling out or praying to the angel Michael, and Michael responding by saying something to the effect of, well, you're looking for manna in everything that you eat. And that line, "I was looking for manna and everything I ate," just has really kind of floored me. I've listened to the song probably 100 times so far this year, and it hits me every time. So anyway, whatever my year-end Spotify stuff will probably just be a bunch of Rustin Kelly songs, but especially that one.
Yeah, Belly of the Beast. All right.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Let's move to the new music of April. It's been a busy month. I mean, we've seen anticipated releases from the likes of Beyonce, Lizzie McAlpine, Taylor Swift, and listeners, you can find posts on all three of those at thinkchristian.net. They're either up there now or in the works and will be soon. And then another April release was a new album from Vampire Weekend. So bandmates Ezra Koenig, Chris Bio, and Chris Thompson are back. This is their fifth album titled Only God Was Above Us. So before we consider the theological implications of that title and, you know, the many other religious references that are throughout this collection of songs, which is par for the course for Vampire Weekend, I'd like to hear what you both made of the album's sound. I'm wondering if there was anything different going on here than what you were used to or maybe what you expected. What'd you make of the sound, Abby?
It's both, I think, of a piece with a lot of Vampire Weekend songs in terms of just the rhythm and the tempo. But the instrumentation of it is, it's more orchestral, I think. It's more chaotic. It's also more distorted. I've noticed even in spots that have like an upbeat piano kind of driving the song itself, it ends in kind of a strange distortion of said piano to make it feel slightly off. There's the album's final track is called Hope, but it's a very dour kind of hope, I think, in the way that it is put together. So yeah, it makes sense that Vampire Weekend made this record, but it sounds a little bit different than a lot of the stuff they've made before.
Okay. Did those elements stand out to you, Eric?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I was trying to think about it in context of their whole catalog so far. It's definitely a lot different than Father of the Bride, which was a lot more, you know, jam band-esque. I think there are more similarities, maybe kind of as Abby was alluding to like a record like Modern Vampires of the City, which to me is kind of still their like masterpiece. But it is different. Like it takes those familiar elements and does some different things with them. I've read a lot of people talking about this is like their noisiest record so far. And I think that's true to an extent. But, you know, I was just thinking a lot about like, what is the noise actually doing? And so much of that noise, again, as Abby referenced, is like almost these very, I mean, there's actually a song on the record called Classical, but it's these like chamber pop feel, these like fugal pianos, these like choral vocals. And I might say more about this as we get to kind of our reflections on the lyrics and the themes, but it almost feels like there's kind of this like tethering of the sound to this like great classical tradition while also kind of then coming in and, as Abby was saying, distorting that with this kind of more modern noise. So it's this very like reaching to the past, but also kind of present tense thing musically that I think is really interesting.
Yeah, I was really struck by the noise, as you put it, Eric. And, you know, Abby, you said chaotic, slightly off. There is so much to my ear sonic agitation on this album, and the guitars, in many instances, they're lurching. The horns are squealing often all over the place. And then the piano that I think's already been mentioned, to me, it feels very wayward. It's it's going off in its own direction, sometimes separate from what the rest of the song is doing. And this is all very disciplined. I don't mean to, you know, suggest that this is something that isn't planned or purposeful. But the sum of it is, yeah, just kind of this agitation sonically. And that did surprise me, given Father of the Bride. You know, the harmonious melodies there, for the most part, they captured to me this genuine urge for renewal is how I took that, even in the midst of, or even in, I should say, the music on that album and the instrumentation. You know, when we got together to talk about that album, we did it under the theme of resurrection hope. So it had this sort of booing sense to it. And then here on Only God Was Above Us, you know, there are melodies throughout. As you guys said, this is Vampire Weekend still, but it's amidst all of these squeals and alarm bells is what they kind of sounded to me. Felt a lot of distress. And maybe even, here's the interesting part I want to talk about, is maybe even some resignation about the state of things, which is totally understandable. I mean, we're facing this precarious American election. There's increasing environmental degradation, hot spots of warfare around the globe. We could go on and on, right? And in the face of all that, we get a song like Capricorn, where, and you know, this is actually one of the more melodic tunes, I think, but mm-hmm. still it has lines like, I know you're tired of trying, listen clearly, you don't have to try. And then if we look at Hope, the last song that's already been mentioned, I agree, kind of an ironic title, we get this, the righteous rage was foolish pride, and your enemy's invincible. I hope you let it go. The righteous rage was foolish pride. The conquerors did not divide. The call keeps coming from inside. I hope you let it go. I hope you let it go. Hope you let it go. Your enemy's invincible. I hope you let it go. So here's my question for you too. Is what I'm hearing here, do you think it's something like despair? Or is this maybe something like a giving over to God? Maybe here's where the album title comes back into it. Maybe even something Christians might categorize as lament. This is something I haven't, you know, been able to reconcile sitting with the album a little less than a week. I'm wondering what you make of this and if you have a stronger sense either way. What would you say, Eric?
Can I say all of the above and none of the above? Is that yeah. appropriate?
Yeah. You could, but I'll ask you to expand.
I'll say more. Trust me. And I'm really curious what Abby has to say. Like the biblical touchstone that really hit me the hardest, at least in the first few listens, is kind of a almost like Ecclesiastes, Solomon-ish kind of response. And I think the song that really drives that home for me is later in the album track, and I don't have the name in front of me right now, but where he talks about the idea that he says, you know, he's talking about all these different kind of moments in history and says, it wasn't built for me, it's your academy, but in my time, you taught me how to see each generation makes its own apology. It wasn't built for me. And there's kind of this sense to me of resignation of like, you know, we all kind of are committing our specific expressions of sin in this day, but they also are kind of the same sins we've always been committing, which is why that kind of classical music element is so interesting to me. It's mm-hmm. kind of like, hey, there's this continuum and we've all been kind of screwing this thing up from the beginning, but we're doing it in our own way right now. And so there feels like almost kind of a nothing new under the sun feeling to me on this record.
Gotcha.
But I do think like tucked into that is some sense of giving over to God, if you want to call it that, that like, you know, the world has continued to spin. It's continuing to spin. There's, you know, kind of these greater forces above it. But here we are kind of down below all continuing to kind of trudge on in the ways that we always have. So I don't know. For me, it has that kind of wisdom literature, but kind of more of the pessimistic side of wisdom literature, feeling through it as there is a sense of like both lament and, you know, yeah, resignation, understanding this is the way it's going to be.
Where'd you fall on this question, Abby?
Yeah. So I actually want to bring our attention to the album cover that kind of, we're going away a little bit from the music and lyrics, but
no, that's
I was very interested in that cover. And it is actually, it's a real photograph. I mean, obviously it's a real photograph, but it's a photograph from a photographer named Steven Siegel, who took it, I think, in the 80s. If you go on his website, there's like a whole series of photos that he's taken, a lot of them kind of people living in or existing in urban decay, which I think is really interesting. But he's taking this photo, and it's a really surreal photo because there's a man who seems to be walking on the side of a subway car and a person who seems to be sitting down just normally, and he's the one who's reading a newspaper, and the headline is the title of the album, Only God Was Above Us. And it turns out that subway car, it was staged oddly, but it was like a disposed subway car, which is why all the windows are bashed in and broken. And they were able to pose it to make both of those characters look like somebody was walking on the side, but he was actually standing on the floor while somebody else was sitting down while he was actually kind of lying down in an awkward angle. The headline from that newspaper is a real story. It's from a story about a Hawaiian Airlines flight where the roof came off mid-flight, and it's a direct quote from one of the survivors. He said, "I looked up and only God was above us." And I feel like all of that kind of gives itself into A, a feeling of chaos, and B, a feeling of you can only do so much in certain situations. Like if you're on an airplane and the ceiling comes off mid-flight, that is chaotic. You can do nothing about it. And I feel like there's a certain sense of that throughout the songs on the album too. Somebody who's been in the fight, who has friends who are still like actively trying to fight for something. There's the assertion in the first track, Ice Cream Piano, that's like, was it you don't want to win the fight because you don't want the peace? There's a kind of a, I think maybe a self-critical or outwardly critical sense of that. But I think a lot of it does come down to giving it over to God because that's the only choice you have, not because you've given up.
Mm. So you're both nudging me towards a sunnier view of hope.
Okay.
At least.
I didn't know that's what I was doing, like, but I'll take it. Yeah.
I mean, this really struck me as a dour release from them, I would say. And again, I've only been with it for a couple of days now. And a lot of it did have to do with the musicality. Any other songs worth highlighting, though, either along the lines of what we've been talking about, or maybe ones that are doing something different, or ones that have stuck out to you among the others now that you've had some days to sit with the album?
Yeah, first of all, I just want to make double back and say the song I referenced earlier is called Gen X Cops, which I think is one of the great song titles in a while.
Yeah.
all love to Gen X, which I'm this close to being, but I really think the album hits its stride in the middle from about tracks 3 through 8. And I really love that run. I'll say again, I kind of referenced it in an allusion, but Mary Boone, which comes right after Gen X Cops, is the one that has kind of this very beautiful, almost choral passage.
Yeah, it's lovely.
Toward the end. And you kind of, I don't know, it feels like almost like a, there were all these great requiems that were written in the classical music era with, from Faure and all these people, Mozart. And I feel like it's like you could play this song or perform this song in a cathedral, but it would be like a real bummer of a service. So it feels like it kind of fits in that tradition to me.
Well, I hope you feel like loving someone soon.
Yeah, the middle section of this record, I think, is some of the best stuff they've recorded.
Is Mary Boone the one, Eric, that it suddenly kind of breaks out into this party a little bit at sections? Am I thinking of the same one?
I think so. I'd have to
go back
and
check. Yeah, it's a little bit at odds with some of what else is going on. And I feel like, okay, well, here we're getting into more something that there's a bit of joyfulness actually at play here as well. But yeah, that's one of the songs I've gravitated towards also.
And I'll just say too, real quick, like I think one of the things that makes this record so interesting, and it fits with what both of you have said, but with all this noise and all this musicality, the songs are rarely one thing at a time. It feels like there's always like these competing impulses coming together.
Yeah.
In, as you said, Josh, a really deliberate way, but this record is so much about isolation and connection at once, and feeling resigned and hopeful at once, and defeated and kind of needing to step forward at once. Like it feels like it's all these things at once. And I feel like that's such a apt reflection of how most of us feel most of the time right now, that we feel both disconnected from the world and way too connected, all of those things. And I think that's throughout the lyrics, but I think the record musically does that so well, of saying like, we're not going to let you sit in one mood at a time. You have to kind of sit with all of it at once.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Abby? A song that you would cite as one you've appreciated more than the others?
Maybe not appreciated, but intrigued by the song The Surfer, which I actually didn't care for musically all that much because it felt like such a copy of like a moody blues song that it seemed like it was almost trying too hard. but there's some really interesting lyrics in there. Like there's a direct reference to the crucifixion, a Roman soldier's spearhead jammed above the waist, followed by just a list of kind of strong people broken down, examples of that. Fake fortune teller scandalized by fate, broke bodybuilder crushed beneath the weight, lost and deluded trying to find your place, inept long distance runner losing every race, which is an interesting kind of balance between competent people who are overworked to the point of falling apart and people who were just not really prepared for the things that they were going to have to encounter.
scandalized by fate. Broke bodied builder, crushed beneath the weight. Lost and deluded, trying to find your place. And that long distance runner, losing every race.
And I feel like the entire album kind of argues with both sides of that, both people who are good at what they do and are tired, and people who should just be sitting down and shutting up and just won't. And I'm not sure quite where the album falls judgmentally in terms of, like, should you do anything? Should you try anything? Should you be, like, should you just give up, basically, which sounds really mm-hmm. defeatist to me. But then I think about just, like, the context of, like, of that image on the cover, which I think really is kind of a good catalyst for the rest of the album, that, like, in some cases you don't have anything else that you can do. And it's important to recognize when that is, because otherwise you're just, like, running up against a wall and you're going to exhaust yourself, and that won't do anybody, you or anybody else, any good. And that's a hard lesson to learn, especially for somebody who's, like, involved in social justice and paying attention to the news and, like, wants to try as hard as I can all the time, that there are times, not just when you don't have to, but times when you shouldn't. And it's kind of hard to judge when it's one and when it's the other.
I feel like there's an odd, I really appreciate everything that Abby just said so much. And I feel like there's an odd sort of compassion in that. Mm. Like, I don't know that my first adjective for this record would be compassionate or sensitive, but to say either you're depleted or you probably shouldn't have been put in this position either before, you know what I mean? Like, anyway, like, you shouldn't have to be thinking about this. I feel like there's an odd sort of, like, identification with that. And that doesn't mean that these songs are letting people off the hook necessarily for mistakes they made or for the ways that things are going. But I feel like there is sort of a, hey, everybody's really up against it. And whether that's your fault or somebody else's fault. And I feel like there's an odd, like, level of compassion to that that I sort of appreciate now that I think about it.
And part of that sort of compassion is a recognition of what's brought you to this place. So right, in that sense, the musical distortion, the sonic agitation is necessary for that sort of, to get to that place that you both are talking about. Well, thank you. Yeah, you're helping me think more about this album, Abby. I'm glad you brought the album cover, because that's one thing that I peeked at a couple of times and I kept meaning, like, I got to find a blown up version of this to really, really take a look, and hadn't gotten around to it. So thank you for doing that. Any other tidbits or different things either of you want to touch on before we wrap up?
I miss Rostam sometimes. Yeah. I don't know if people will appreciate that reference, but former band member Rostam.
This would be an original band member who left after three albums?
Yeah, after three.
Three albums,
I had, in preparation for this album cycle, I was rewatching when the band was on SNL during the Modern Vampires of the City run. And this is not a knock at all on Only God Was Above Us, because I think musically there's so much going on, but I do miss the Rostam harmonies on some of those songs that were just kind of otherworldly. So I think he would have had fun with the the choral passages on this record.
And I'm going to do my best at his last name, Rostam Batmanglij, I believe.
That seems about right.
Hopefully close, but
His solo records have just been under Rostam, so I felt safe staying there, but yeah.
All right. Another last minute recommendation there from Eric. So thank you for that. Yeah. This was good. This was good, guys. What's the best place these days for folks to follow you? Speaking of chaotic and sonic noise, is there a good place on social for you, Abby?
I am back on Twitter for the moment for book related promotion stuff and still on Blue Sky as well. So you can find me either of those places. As Abby Olchesi at both of those spots.
All right. Thank you much. How about you, Eric? Besides the Instagram stuff I've been seeing, I think you're plugging away still on Twitter/X, right?
For now, I have settled, and this could change, but I have settled at Twitter. I can't call it the other thing. Threads and Instagram. And I swear I am trying to make each of those things different enough. But frankly, if you just want to you don't have to follow me anywhere. But if you want to follow me one of those places, you'll get the gist of it. So
all right, or you could follow Eric everywhere. That's allowed too.
That's up to you. But I know people have lives. So
all right, thanks again, you guys. Good to talk to you. We'll do it again soon.
Thanks.
Sounds good.
Looking for more music thoughts shared through the TC lens? Well, as I mentioned, we have posts on the new Beyoncé, Lizzy, McAlpine, and Taylor Swift, all up at thinkchristian.net. We'd love to hear your opinions on any of those albums or on Vampire Weekend's Only God Was Above Us. You can always email us at tcpodcast@thinkchristian.net. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter/X. Look for us at Think Christian. The TC Podcast is a listener-supported production of Reframe Ministries, a family of programs designed to help you see your whole life reframed by God's gospel story. Visit reframeministries.org for more information. Our audio engineer and post-production supervisor is John Reeder, and Reframe's co-director overseeing content strategy is Robin Vassalin. I'm Josh Larson. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back in a couple of weeks to consider how another corner of our pop culture fandom connects with our faith.